You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of June 26, 2019, and the Forever Games are coming to an end.
Back everybody to the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Chester.
I'm George Alborn.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And we thought they were dead, but they're back from the grave. It's that single-player game I hear so much about.
I don't play single-player games anymore.
That's it. I'm one of those kids. I just stand there on my phone playing Fortnite, flossing.
I've spent way too long alone. It's time to only be with friends forever.
We were talking about our conversation this week hinges mostly around two articles, one by Owen Good about Gears 5 and the second by Daniel Friedman around single player games and their relative rise and or fall compared to live games. And even last year, we were talking about things like the Star Wars game that had been canceled. Yeah. We were talking about the rise of things like Fortnite and
Apex Legends.
And it was like, okay, well, like, what is going to happen to the single player game? And now all of a sudden,
single player games are back. Yeah,
they're back.
What a pivot, huh? That was a fast turnaround.
I mean, it is. I think actually there's probably a couple angles to it, but I think, like, starting with the Gears 5 thing is somewhat instructive. So the whole story here is that Gears, which I had forgotten this until I read this article, but Gears was pretty microtransaction-y. I remember you could, like, buy different, like, you can have, like, oh, here's a leopard print Lancer or whatever. But there's a lot of stuff that you could buy.
Sure.
And apparently they're paring back on that in Gears 5.
Yep. Yep, that makes sense. Well, it also makes sense from the perspective of Microsoft being really consumer-friendly in their messaging, right? Like, EA recently got sucked into the boondoggle that is defending themselves around loot boxes. Yep. Slash, I just love the doublespeak of surprise mechanics.
Yes.
which their legal team, I guess, used to defend the loot box policy, I think, in a UK court trial.
I just like the idea of surprise mechanics where it's like, surprise, you didn't know this game had physics. Whoa.
Yeah. Surprise mechanics would be sweet. I mean, all the best games have surprise mechanics.
I guess that's true. Five Nights at Freddy's, all surprise mechanic.
I think it fits in with the whole, like, it's, hey, look, you look cool and consumer friendly if you announce on stage, no loot boxes.
Right.
You know?
So. Yeah. I mean, the thing about the Gears 5 announcement though is that I don't know this, but just reading between the lines and just reading the actual lines, there's the system that they're going to call Tour of Duty, where players can do daily challenges and do seasonal challenges, and that's a battle pass, right?
Yeah, but allegedly there's no cost to that. So you just earn increased customization content by playing through the daily challenges and going through all of those milestones and, you know, getting those sweet chivos. I don't think that there's a cost to it per se. And there's no season pass, so it's not like you are paying to get that content early either.
Yeah.
Is my understanding. There was a note in here that was saying that there may be some extra maps that will be sold.
Mm-hmm. I think the DLC, like the maps and stuff, I think they, yeah, I don't know. I think that people are misinterpreting this as everything's going to be free. Like, I fully expect you will be able to either buy the battle pass or buy your way out of the battle pass before it expires.
Yeah, which is what Fortnite does, right? Yeah, like there's a season. And you can pay, I think it's like $9.95 to buy into the season.
Yeah.
And during which time, if you play, say, roughly an hour a day, you unlock a bunch of content. And therefore, get all the stuff, quote unquote, for free because you've played it, but you had to buy into the possibility of getting it for free. So, and
then you get two friends to sell it too, and then pretty much, and yes. They get two friends. And
oh my god, that's a great. Hey, you know what? I have a great monetization scheme. Everybody, listen, Neutralife. I think this is. Maybe we're jumping ahead a little bit, but I think this is one of the keys to the anxiety around in-game monetization and loot boxes and season passes. It's just become extremely confusing from a consumer perspective.
Yeah.
What is the sequence of things that I must buy in order to get X? Because it is increasingly complicated, you know? And it's complicated in the games that I play regularly myself, right? Like, even in League of Legends, there's these complex timed events that you get, you know, we're releasing a fictional currency that you can only spend on these things during this window. But if you buy this skin bundle, then you unlock this special orb. And if you use the orb, you can craft X. And it's a huge rigmarole, right? Yeah. So has
League gone towards that direction, by the way? Just like a quick League tangent. Like, has League gone more towards the Battle Pass model?
I mean, we'll probably talk about League again later because I think it's. The idea of like why we continue to play the games that we play is always an interesting one to me. So yes, I mean there are timed events, and those timed events will often have currencies. You don't buy into it. Like, you will always just unlock things by playing. I'm gonna explain something a bit more complicated now.
Is it spin to win?
No. So basically, now we are jumping ahead. But essentially, I think one of the reasons that I spend a good amount of time still playing League of Legends, almost 10 years after I first started playing it, is because there's this connection to esports. This year, I think they recognized that and released two different new ways to monetize esports. One of them is Pro View, which is basically like a spectator tool that you can pay to get a season of like special viewership options. Almost like, I don't know, like imagine having some insider extra stats around like a football match or something.
It's like the physical sports have been doing this for a while. It's like the MLB season pass or whatever. Like, you can get multiple games, you can get like different angles, you can get different you can get like a regional coverage, like announcers and so forth. Like,
yeah, so essentially it's very similar to that. I can watch any live stream and any VOD of those live streams from the perspective of any individual player, esports player. And I can have multiple views at once. So I can watch like four players on one team all playing at the exact same time.
Yep.
So that's one way they're monetizing it. There's no additional stuff around that. The one that's a bit more interesting and relevant to this conversation are the LCS and LEC passes. So you can buy a pass for a team, and that team will get 50% of the revenue will go back towards esports, with a percentage of that revenue going towards the team that you're choosing to support when you buy this pass. So you buy the pass and say, you buy one pass. You say, I'm going to commit my fandom to one North American team, right? You select that team. They get the lion's share of the revenue that's split towards esports. The rest gets equitably distributed to all other teams within the league, right? So there's some like sharing there.
Yeah.
That then unlocks what is essentially a pass, in the sense that there are now missions tied to that. Some of those missions are completed by just watching them play. So if you watch on, watch.lolesports.com or whatever, and you watch that team, specifically that team that you've pledged your fealty to, you will unlock extra content, right? Or you can do other like in-game events. Now, that's not keeping me playing at all. Like, I'm not being like, oh my God, I gotta log in to fucking get my 1 hour of killing a Yordle or whatever. Like, that's not me. I do find myself always drawn back to playing when I watch the pros play, because there's just something that gets me jazzed of like watching people way better. Like, I don't know. It's like I see someone be really good and I think I want to be that good. And then I realize I'm horrible. I feel bad about myself. And it's just this endless feed of, you know, building me up, knocking me back down again that I can't quit, you know?
Well, I mean, two things. One, it's even if you aren't playing, it's keeping you in the system, which is just watching it. And now that they've monetized the spectatorship, then that's makes sense to them. And second, that's similar to, and then it regardless, like, it does inspire you to play because you remember what you enjoyed about it. It's the same reason why every May and June you see more kids outside playing basketball, because that's when the NBA playoffs and finals are, and all of a sudden you realize, oh man, basketball really is fun to play. And then you remember that, and then you also remember that you're terrible at it, and then you stop for a few months, you know.
Yeah, right, because I'm like eighth grade dunks on you.
Yeah. So it's like there is something they smartly monetize the viewership, but also they know that viewing it will probably get you back into playing it for at least a little while.
Right. I mean, to get at Daniel Friedman's article, right? Mm. Like, the crux of it is, are we at a place where the competition for those types of drawing you back into it, like, are we saturated? Like, is there something about the way that we receive and expect rewards that keep us in? Like, there's just this extreme demand on us as players for these live games, right? Yeah. And at some point, because it's not just because of like one game, but the environment of it, it's almost like, it's not even just that we have a limit to the number of games that we can play that are always online games, which is also true, but there's also just a cognitive limit of being able to understand and willingly give yourself up to the mechanisms that are keeping you coming back.
Yep.
You know, I look at the battle pass mechanisms
and like the meta mechanisms of those battle passes.
Yeah, like, you know, if I look at a battle pass like Fortnite, right? And I say, "Man, I can spend $10 and play Fortnite and fanatically try to like unlock all of the shit, but it means I'm not going to be able to then do this in other games that are also trying to get me into it, or I can pay $28 and unlock a lot of content, or I can just say fuck it and stop playing Fortnite." I know I've made my choice. You know? Like, quick check-in. You know, you and I both played Apex Legends. When was the last time you pulled that up?
Indeterminate.
A very long time, right? Yeah. And I think I stopped playing before the Battle Pass. But to me, when the Battle Pass thing comes out, that makes me less likely to want to go back.
Mm.
You know?
I mean, I think that is one thing. So I think we're in agreement that it is a zero-sum game to a very large extent.
Yeah.
The one game will... There are physically only so many hours in the day, and one game will crowd out others, which I think is pretty... I think he did a good job of kind of building to that, but I think it's illogical. It's illogical, but also... it's obvious, but also needs to be stated.
Yep.
Because I think it is true. I think there's just a physics problem that you just can't play that many games. Well, but then the thing... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think it creates also a sort of state of anxiety, because it's not just that these games are doing it that are like the online-only thing, but the reason the Gears No Season Pass is news at all is because almost all single-player games are also doing this.
Yeah.
Which is, like, fine, and I guess that makes sense, because there's all these online modes, and even single-player games will have, like, online content afterwards, or will have, in-game customizations and, like, smaller monetization options. And I get it, like, it's providing, like, a new revenue model that is helping to subsidize games, and I understand that. But I also feel like it creates this added obligation of, like, more and more content coming out. It's just kind of a scary place to, like, it's not just potentially scary for consumers. I think from a developer perspective, it's scary because the amount of obligations you have, and like, if you fuck up and you lose players, like, you know, Apex Legends is not doing as well as it did when it first came out.
Yeah.
That's kind of a frightening place to be, right? Like, I saw an article today that was saying that in Fortnite's recent patch notes, they notify their players that they were taking 2 weeks off because they just haven't taking any time off for a while. And there's been talk in the studio about, like, oh, Fortnite has been
crunching. There's a lot of crunch stuff around there.
Yeah, because there's all of these expectations around it. And if every single game is just chock full of these crazy season passes, and in order to get me to play, the rewards have to be increasingly big and crazier, like, it feels like we're demanding more and more and more. And that's a losing battle. Like, not everybody can win just the pure content war. Because, like, you're going to burn studios out, they're going to make bad content. Like, not everybody can do that. So it feels like a losing game for everybody involved if we're constantly chasing, like, we got to get more, we got to get more, we got to shove more shit into this thing to just add more and more value for $5, right? The reason this exists at all is because nobody wants to raise the price of video games that are insanely expensive to make, you know?
Right, yes.
And it's just like, hey, let's find another area of video game monetization that we can greatly undervalue.
One of the more disturbing aspects of his argument is the implication that playing a game for the sake of the game is no longer good enough. Where, like, his implied thesis about Apex Legends is they have not been able to churn out content that is either, and I'm not talking about game content, I'm just talking about just, you know, skins and events and things like that. They haven't been able to do it at a pace that has, you know, attracted people to the you know, artistic things that, you know, like skins or whatever that they want to see, or they haven't done it at a pace that can match Fortnite. And it's like, well, people are leaving just because you're not giving them new accoutrements,
yep.
Not because there's anything wrong with the game.
Right.
And that's terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because then it just is a race where it's like, I just need to give you the most and most frequent superficial shit for you to keep on the hamster wheel. And it doesn't matter that this game is created by the people who basically defined the modern FPS and make really fucking good games. It's defined by the fact that, well, they're not willing to churn out as much crap as I want to see in, like, the little dopamine center in my brain just needs that hit. So I'm just going to go back to whatever's going to give me that hit.
I mean, not to slide us further back into the past, but that's kind of why something like modding might be a cool direction, you know?
Yeah.
Or a systems-based approach to the creation of content, you know? Like, if you have, you know, let's say Spelunky, right? Like, the reason that game is infinitely playable is that it's randomly generated, and every time you play, it's something new, you know? So I could see some larger studios that have that know-how developing content pipelines that sort of produce themselves.
Yeah.
You know, to have a solve for this where they can buy themselves a little bit more time to come out with some of that, like, bigger content.
I feel like another thing that was very, again, I feel like the article was just a good summation of various trends that have been happening, but it's a good thought experiment to think about just the impact that Fortnite has had on the industry.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Destiny just really squeaked in under the wire.
Yep.
Because, you know, if it had come out a few years later, it would have suffered the same fate as Anthem, Anthem by all accounts isn't a terrible game. It's just, you know, maybe it wasn't what people were looking for, or it wasn't as sophisticated as some of the more mature live games out there. But Destiny had the oxygen to survive and evolve. Yeah. And now people are saying, oh, well, they're being hurt by the Fortnite effect because they just can't churn out that much content. It takes them a while. It's not the same type of mechanics. And so, but if that had happened today, like if Destiny had been released today, would we even have a Destiny 2, let alone a theoretical Destiny 3 and onward?
Yeah. That's a very good question.
Ugh.
Yeah,
it's crazy. And I mean, like, what will happen with, like, Anthem and those other games?
I don't know. I mean, I go back to Fortnite, and one of the things that comes to my mind is just I don't know a ton of people that play it with any sort of regularity. Mm-hmm. And I know we joke that, oh, like, it's, you know, we'll make jokes that Fortnite's a baby game and for kids and stuff, but a lot of kids do play Fortnite. In the same way that, like, real talk, a lot of fucking kids played Club Penguin. Wasn't something that you were reading about on, like, you know, Kotaku all the time, but that game was really popular and it made money, you know? So, you know, part of me thinks it's not just, oh, this game does the Battle Pass better. It's this game did something unique, got there first, and got people playing with each other. And just like me, I will play the games that my friends play, you know? And so some of them played Apex Legends, but if they didn't stick it out for one reason or another, maybe one of the friends wasn't satisfied with the battle pass, but that means that there's a ripple effect and three other friends drop off, then so be it. You've lost, you know, a significant base of your players if that's how you're losing folks. Right. But what gives me some amount of pleasure from all this, or maybe not like, you know, not pleasure, but a sense of solace at least, is that it does mean that for potentially people like you and I, like, the calls of the death of the single player games were significantly overblown. I think we were calling that out even then, that they were overblown, but I think it's a good thing to say, you know what, there is a type of consumer in which providing them a single piece of content and maybe a piece of paid DLC and we can call it a day is sufficient.
Yeah.
You know, for recouping your investment. You're not going to be fucking loaded, but not everybody can, you know, in the same way that not everybody who, you know, escapes to Hollywood to become an actor are going to be a movie star. We also need people to play the 5 out of 6 dentists. You know what I mean? Like, there are people that are career actors and they make a living and it's not great, but that's what they do. That might be the case for some online multiplayer games, you know? Like, we don't all have to be Fortnite.
I mean, that was the thing that I was thinking about for Apex Legends too, where there's... It's also notoriously hard to measure any of this stuff other than just kind of vague, zeitgeisty type of things. But there's, you know, roughly at its peak, you know, there were 50 million people playing Apex Legends.
Damn, and then that's a lot of people.
Well, then there was, you know, even, you know, Daniel goes through in his article and is like, well, there are some stats that are saying their Twitch viewing base has dropped off by 80%. And so, like, let's just say that it's 80% decline. That's still 10 million people playing your game.
Yep.
Which is more than WoW. It's more than, you know, almost every other large live game out there. And so you probably are doing pretty well if you have a sustainably run studio, if you have 10 million people playing your game.
Well, and then on top of that, you have, I mean, this is getting like too far into Mr. Businessman's territory, but you know, if you are a surprise success, like something like Fortnite, you may not have even tapped all of the international markets that you thought you could have been able to tap, right? Like, how many Fortnite players are from China right now or Korea? Like, are there other opportunities for you to increase your player base? I think League of Legends is an interesting example because, you know, for the longest time, people have been like, oh, like, when is League of Legends going to die? Is it on its last leg? But it's doing very well in China right now and over the past few years to a degree where it is well known. Like, it is not like, oh, the company is now a global company to a degree where it's not like it's being sustained purely by U.S. audiences. So 50% of the U.S. audiences drops down. If all of my friends stopped playing League of Legends overnight, it would still be a monetary success solely because of the international audience that it's bringing in. And I think that you can look at something like Twitch and go, oh, during the U.S. peak hours, like not a lot of people are watching Apex Legends, but it doesn't mean it's not sustainable for a variety of other reasons, because like you said, it's kind of a black box in terms of how all of the, you know, how money goes in and how money goes out and where your audiences are actually coming from.
And you have to imagine there is more space out there than you see on the front, on the home pages of various enthusiast websites, because fucking Warframe is still out there, you know, 10 years or 15 years later, however long that game's been out.
Yep.
The whole like world of fill in the blanks games are still out there. It's I
there's a new Angry Birds movie coming out, Scott.
Well, I feel like that's them just laundering money somehow. At this point, you
know? I've always felt that Angry Birds was secretly an Italian mob scheme.
there is a lot out there. But even like going back to the idea of, okay, maybe single player games are a safe bet. It's, I think putting it in those words, but taking those words very seriously in that they are a safer, meaning more predictable bet.
Yes.
Whereas you don't have to roll the dice with all of these variables around, you know, will our technology work? Will our marketing work? Will there be the right sort of balance of international and domestic? I mean, it is more of a, I feel like as much as it can be, it is more of a known quantity to know, like, okay, this game is roughly, we think we have a good game on our hands. We're going to spend the requisite amount of money to market it. And we can basically predict fairly well, like, what it's going to do.
Yeah. I mean, real talk, there's no safe bet in games. Like, if yes. I want to take fucking, if I wanted to invest and make money hand over fist, I'm not investing in video games.
Right. Yeah.
I'd be investing in diet pills.
I was about to say, yes. Cigarettes.
Yes.
Juul, the wave of the future.
Hey, man.
I think there's also, it is a reminder when you see something like Fallout 76, which Daniel mentions in his article, but he doesn't really go into, I mean, maybe because they've already been kicked enough, but he doesn't really go into the fact that it's not just that Fallout 76 didn't succeed because it was crowded out by other games. It didn't succeed because it was not a good product.
Yes.
And so it's like,
exactly.
Even if you put something out there, there's still, you can't just say like, oh, well, Fortnite ate our lunch. It's like, well, you didn't put out something that was appetizing to people anyway.
Yeah. What did you put in your lunchbox? What is this garbage in here?
An irradiated rat from the wastelands.
Yeah, like a day-old ham sandwich that's not going to cut it.
Yeah. I mean, I think there is... the meritocracy is largely a myth in my mind, but there is a certain amount of meritocracy in terms of quality. You know, people tend to like things that are enjoyable to play. It's rare that a game that is like extremely broken or crappy becomes the top seller out there. So there's still a certain threshold that, okay,
right.
There is going to, the most popular games out there will have to have some level of quality that people will recognize, even, a mass audience.
Well, and I think interestingly, it also signifies that you're not going to salvage a game because you've got a really compelling season pass.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't matter if what you're saying is, well, the original game wasn't that good, but man, like the fixings, you know, like
your
rat sandwich comes with this like really nice mustard like a day later. It's not gonna make it more edible, you know?
Right. I hate this game, but the skins are just so great on it that I'm gonna
also can gonna I just shout playing. Out for bringing back the sandwich analogy. I feel sandwich like it's been a back. While. The sandwich is back, ladies and gentlemen. If you've been a longtime listener, you know how much I love sandwich metaphors. So
sandwich and sandwich related metaphors.
Sandwich and sandwich related analogies, I'm all for it. I totally agree with you. And I think looking at the Apex Legends one, I think he makes a compelling argument that the Battle Pass did not provide enough value to bring players back. But
yeah.
I can't help but wonder, like, well, you know, is that even being too specific as to why, right? Like, I don't right. think it's not as easy just to say here's why. Like, oh, the game itself was so great and so compelling, but there just wasn't enough shiny objects to keep people's attention. Like, well, you know, part of me thinks that a lot of people will go back to the games where they find inherent value in the act of playing it itself, right? Like, to going back to what you were talking about earlier or our Spelunky example, there's something about the games that we continue to play, especially the games that we continue to play well after our friends stop playing it, is a testament to why we just like them, you know? Like, there are people who are still playing, you know, Dwarf Fortress or still playing, you know, Battlefield 1943 or fucking running EverQuest on a fan server, right? Like, they're not doing that because someone said, hey, look at all this sweet, dope new Battle Pass content you can buy for $15 and you can earn by playing all these mini games. Like, that's not what's bringing people back.
Right.
What's bringing people back was that the game is fun and really compelling and potentially they have some friends to play with, you know? So there's a part of me that says, well, you can almost set aside how confusing the Battle Passes are. Certainly, I don't think it necessarily helps from a consumer perspective, but you know, maybe people are just going back to Fortnite because Fortnite's actually pretty good.
I also think I think it often gets overlooked, but the twin benefits of it's on everything, whether it's a phone or a console or a computer, if it has a screen, it can play Fortnite, which is more than can be said for most other live games out there. And two, they smartly capitalized on various youth movements.
Yep.
You know, they got celebrities to play their game,
yep.
or they got Avengers tie-ins, or people were freaking flossing and dabbing in the game.
Yep.
And that just, it's a different type of marketing, but that opens you up to just being more culturally relevant and you have to play this game in order to be cool on the playground. And that that will overcome some of the gaps that you might find in, you know, gameplay or whatever.
You have to act fast, though, because the window of Thanos dabbing being cool is very small.
But it was there. I mean, yeah. It's they're able to pivot quickly enough to take advantage of those things. And yep. They designed a game that is goofy enough that anything basically can fit in it.
Yep.
And so they have this weird template that they can basically put any sort of co-marketing franchise it to.
Definitely. I also think if you want to watch this, all of this happen again in real time, let's just start paying attention now to all of the like auto chess games, which haven't figured out how they're going to monetize, but are already gaining a stupid amount of traction. Like Riot's releasing one around League of Legends. There's auto chess. There's the Dota one. Like there's a bunch coming out soon. It's the hot new shit. Not that people are going to be, I don't think Thanos is going to be dabbing on a chess board near you anytime soon, but you know, when we're talking about, oh, where are games going and specifically how are games monetizing, I think that'll be another interesting one to watch.
Which one does Drake play? That's the one that I'm going to play.
That's a very good question. You know, the other thing I'll say real quickly about Twitch viewership, but it's really hard to overstate how impactful the top 10 streamers are in terms of viewership. Like if Ninja plays something, that thing is going to be at the top of Twitch, no matter how good that game is.
Right.
You know, for that moment of viewing. So it's difficult also to make a judgment call as to the popularity of a game or the compelling nature of a game by the fact that, you know, like someone's not playing it right now. Right. Dr. Disrespect walks into the men's room at E3 and all of a sudden you are losing hundreds of thousands of viewerships, right. You know, on your game every day because he was an idiot. So,
right. Oh man. That's another reason why I think just wrapping it all back to single player games, there is a certain amount of just mental load or psychological anxiety around this is just kind of a nice place where it's a self-contained world. I can be alone. There's not going to be Twitch drama about it. It's just, I can just do my thing and have an interesting story and that's it. You know, there are boundaries around it.
I mean, it's my Zen shit, dude. Like that's, I'm been playing Outer Wilds. I just finished that rat game. Like that's, I dig it. Like I don't have a ton of time to play games every night. And so often when I do now it's either League of Legends, which I play quite regularly, or one of those single-player games, which I will play tonight.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think most of the games coming out that I'm most excited about are squarely in that single-player space, you know, whether it's the new Star Wars game or the Zelda remake or Cyberpunk or whatever. I mean, those things are very traditional-seeming games, and it just seems more attainable to get something out of them in a time that in a way that fits my schedule.
We'll see about the Cyberpunk one, though. I think Keanu is going to be shilling a season pass any day now.
Keanu would never betray me like that. He told me that I was beautiful.
He said, you're beautiful, even without a season pass.
All right, we will leave it there. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. You can come on down, find us on Spotify, on Stitcher, wherever you listen to podcasts. They come out quite regularly, so we got all that fresh content.
You don't even need to buy a battle pass. You don't need to consume.
Oh, you man, should subscribe, George, though.
Fucking hell.
Experience Points battle pass.
And people had to listen to our show under a certain amount of time, or else they just had to pay us out to get the rest of the episodes. Hold on, we're cutting this out of the end of the show.
Mr. Businessman here.
All right, everyone. Until next time, thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Ciao. Every time we disagree, there's a place to go to, because I